Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler. Great to be back with you for episode number 58. As we record this podcast, it's the second week in June. I can't believe how quickly the year is slipping by. Hope you're well wherever you may be listening, and hope you're going to enjoy today's show, because we'll be joined by accessibility, usability consultant and keynote speaker, the wonderful Molly Watt is coming on the show. She'll be here in just a couple of minutes. And Sight Village 2022 is coming soon, and so are a whole load of summer specials from Vispero. Stay right where you are. The summer specials are coming, Vispero summer specials. We've been doing this home use program for the last couple of years, and it's proven very successful. I think it's even more so important now when we're all in this stage of a technology changing all the time. The technology that we use is changing, is being updated. I don't know how many times I see Office updates, Teams updates, things coming down the tracks. The assistive products that we use are also changing and trying to keep up with this changing landscape. And in order to do that, of course, they're bringing out updates and new major versions of the technology that we provide and support and train on has all these updates as well. And sometimes if you don't have the newest version, you can be disadvantaged. And we don't want that, of course. So here's another great opportunity, as we've been doing for the last couple of years, for you to get hold of some Vispero / Freedom Scientific software and hardware at ridiculously low prices. Huge price slashes on JAWS, Zoom Text and Fusion. Also the Ruby handheld magnifiers, Pearl camera, the OpenBook scanning software and Focus Braille displays. All the information will be on the sightandsound.co.uk website on the 28th of June, which coincidentally enough is the first day of Sight Village, and we'll all be in Birmingham. Really looking forward to going to an exhibition and meeting people and actually, you know, getting out there and chatting to customers again, and talking about some of the technology that we have, and meeting other people in this industry, of course, as well. The specials, the summer specials, will run throughout the month of July. So if you're not going to Sight Village, fear not. And indeed, we are asking people, where possible, to please order online at www.sightandsound.co.uk. More to come on that. And we'll try and get James Everson on a show in the very near future, because James has been the person who's been putting all this together, and he's the guy who knows all about the prices, and we'll have a chat about that. So that's coming up, as is Sight Village, of course, 28th and 29th of July at Cranmore Park Conference and Events Centre in Sully Hill in Birmingham. And if you're coming to that event, go onto the QAC website. There's loads of information there. We're looking forward to seeing people and having a chat. And if you're a regular listener to this podcast, or even if you're not, you may be interested to know that we're going to be podcasting live from the event this year. So we're going to put up bits and pieces as they happen, as we find people who want to chat with us. We'll be putting up these little podcast episodes, mini episodes from Sight Village, starting on the 28th of June. So keep an eye on our feed, because it will be updated regularly. Now, I think that's all the stuff out of the way. Let's get on with our main event. Molly Watt is an accessibility and usability consultant, a keynote speaker who has been at Apple's head office in Cupertino, where she has spoken, And she's also low vision and has a hearing impairment. She's someone actually that I've been chatting to for a while, and we've been meaning to get Molly on the show. So I'm absolutely delighted that last week I had the opportunity to catch up with Molly and have a good chat with her. Now, this is a pre-recorded chat that I did on location in my office with Molly on the other end of a call. So not in our regular studio, but I hope the quality will not detract in any way from all the great things that Molly had to say. As I say, caught up with Molly last week and started by asking her to tell us a little bit about her eye condition and her hearing loss.
Cool. So it kind of comes as a package, to be honest with you. So my condition is called Usher syndrome. So I was born deaf and was just given my first pair of hearing aids, and that was all there was to it, really. We were just told that I was deaf, it was technical blip, no family history, etc., until I got to my teenage years, and then I was experiencing a lot of clumsiness and I was unable to read the board, and I had lots of headaches, and I went for a routine eye check, and it was there when they started querying about what was going on at the back of my eyes, and they asked my parents then, do you know why Molly is deaf? And they said no, we were just told it was a technical blip, and that was that. And they said, well, we think there's something not quite right at the back of Molly's retina, at back of Molly's eye in the retina, and we think it's linked to the deafness, hence the syndrome. So soon after that, so at age 12, I got diagnosed with Usher syndrome. So what that means is I have a severe hearing loss and wear hearing aids, and then my visual impairment is progressive. So I went from being partially sighted at the age of 12 to severely sight impaired, which is politically correct for blind, at the age of 14. Mm. So what that means now is I have about, I'm 27 now, but touch wood, has been pretty stable the last few years. I have about 5 degrees useful vision left, and it's mainly in the center. So I don't have any peripheral vision. That's the blindness of Usher syndrome, which is called retinitis pigmentosa, which you may have heard of, quite common.
Yeah.
But it occurs in the peripheral vision, you know, gets rid of all the peripherals, night blindness, glare blindness. And a lot of the time, not always, but we're left with some useful central vision. So hopefully, you know, I'll keep hold of that, but there's no knowing.
Okay. Can I go back then? Just, you mentioned 27. Can I go back 27 years ago, and your parents are told that their daughter has a severe hearing impairment, and kind of there's a pair of hearing aids, and off you go. What was that like growing up, and how did they deal with that?
Well, I mean, this is it. Mum and Dad had 2 boys, and then they had me. I was their first girl. They were over the moon. And then, of course, discovered I was deaf. And they were devastated because, of course, it was just the unknown. It was kind of like, will Molly ever be able to enjoy music? They're both big music fans. Mm. You know, they had lots of things, lots of scary thoughts I can imagine any parent would have in that situation. But truth be told, I had the happiest childhood because my parents are incredibly optimistic people. They were always in my corner. So from the get-go, the very first question was, right, how is Molly going to communicate? You know, we would like her to be able to have the confidence, essentially, to put her hand up in a classroom and ask for help whenever she needs it. So because of that, we went down the oral route. And so I had, you know, intense speech therapy, which was a lot for both my parents and the school and the local authority. Like, there was a lot of support involved, and a lot of my childhood consisted of sort of being taken out of classes to have one-to-one sessions with adults, which at the time I definitely resented, but it definitely paid off. You know, like, I communicate the way I do now, I'm able to do what I do now, and it honestly just wouldn't have been that way had I not have had my parents. And I think they just found strength in that, you know, seeing me thrive as a child and being able to communicate with my brothers and my grandparents and things like that. So yeah.
Has anyone ever told you, no, Molly, you can't do that? Because I suspect if they have, you turn around and say, well, I'm going to absolutely prove I can do that. You strike me as that type of person.
Yeah, exactly. I have several times, mainly after the Usher syndrome diagnosis, but just being a deaf child, to be honest with you, looking back in hindsight, really wasn't that big of a deal for me personally. Obviously, it's different for everybody. Obviously, I had the loudest hearing aids you could ever imagine. I mean, color-wise, though, I had blue hearing aids, I had green hearing aids, I had pink hearing aids. I thought they were cool. Like, that was me. That's what made Molly Molly. And I really didn't care. I had that confidence as a child, which I absolutely love about childhood Molly, because that's definitely something that I didn't carry on with. Because once I got the Usher syndrome diagnosis, there were, you know, like mental health, like problems. Like, I really struggled with my mental health for a long time, sort of denial is a very cozy place, and then depression and anxiety, and a lot of that was contributed by the school that I was at, who, yeah, there were teachers that were like, you know, you're not like everybody else in the classroom, Molly, you're not going to be able to do this, you're not going to be able to do that, and you know, I made it all the way to university thinking that I was going to do really well because I made it, and I finally got to where I thought I needed to be. And I wanted to be a teacher, a primary school teacher, because I just really loved being around children and saw myself going down the special educational needs route. And, you know, there were things then when they were like, well, you won't be able to do that, will you? Because you're deaf and you're blind. Like, as if I don't already know this, you know. So, yeah, I constantly had that, you know, throughout my life, sadly. And, you know, when I meet people that have disabilities of all kinds, I do kind of in my mind sort of think, you know what, I'm so glad I don't have to go through all that again. Like, just being in education with a disability or going to get a job or anything like that, it's just, it's incredibly stressful. Shouldn't be, but it is. You know,
it's disappointing in a way, isn't it, to hear you say how stressful it is, whereas we might think nowadays things are getting better. I'm hearing from you that things really aren't getting better. There's still a lot of prejudice out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is, but it isn't. I think in a lot of ways, obviously, with the work that I do as well, I thrive to work towards that, you know, where things at workplaces and school and all of that is more inclusive and we can all achieve our full potential. But I think working in that field, I see the best of it and I see the worst of it as well. So it's kind of like seeing where some places are really still starting from the very beginning. Other places have a little bit more experience and are more prone to listening to people, which is all we ask for, you know, just to sit and listen. But yeah, no, I can't say that we're completely lost as a society. I would say in a lot of ways we have progressed, but we still got a long way to go. And I think we will always have a long way to go, to be honest with you, because as time goes on, more and more things come out of the woodwork in terms of like disabilities, conditions, technologies and science and all of this. And that will always present a package of other issues and challenges to, you know, overcome, which isn't to say it's not possible. It is possible, but I think it's always harder than trying to expect society to catch up, because they're already sort of playing catch up. So yeah, it's a difficult one.
So bring us then, if you can, to the now. We just mentioned kind of some of the stuff that you're doing now. You didn't decide to be a teacher. I think in some respects you're doing something potentially far more exciting, building this, can I call it the Molly Watt brand? You know, is that what you wanted to develop almost?
I mean, you could. So yeah, so there's two different, so there's a charity which my family and I set up back in 2011, and that was because we saw a huge gap, particularly in the charity sector, for people with Usher syndrome. There are massive charities for deafblind people, but of course deafblind is a very broad term. There's lots of, it's a massive umbrella of people, and although Usher syndrome is the largest group of deafblind people, congenital deafblind people, we were very much ignored because we can see a bit and we can hear a bit. We were kind of just like pushed to the side because it's like, oh, you don't really need the help, you're fine, which obviously is absolutely not the case. And so we set up the Molly Watt Trust, and I was kind of the guinea pig in everything. So I'd kind of go and experience things and then blog about it and then sort of give advice to other people with Usher syndrome, and we fundraise for bits of technology that has helped me help others so they can, you know, do their GCSE exams at school with a Kindle that can enlarge text and change contrast and, you know, independently navigate somewhere with an Apple Watch and things like that. So That's kind of been, we were only little, so obviously it bears my name, it's called the Mollywatch Trust. It was not my choice to do that, but there we go. and I think it was just because I had built that profile from the ground up with the help of my parents, you know, with the blog and everything, and it was getting quite a lot of traction. So when it came to setting up the charity, you know, having it in my name made sense. Mm. And of course, obviously it's all about Usher syndrome, you know, it's all completely voluntary on our part, and it's all about everybody and kind of bringing people together, families as well. And I think really it helped, particularly my parents, it helped them really get through the diagnosis as well, helping other people help them. So it was certainly like a long old journey and like a very worthwhile one. And then from the employment side, because obviously you do need to work and earn money, I with the help of my parents again, set up my own company back in 2016. And that was, you know, not long out of university, to be honest, because I went to uni, obviously, hoping to be a teacher. I withdrew because I just felt defeated at this point, because I constantly had to fight and fight and fight and kind of just get lost in the system. And it was exhausting. And one of the only reasons I actually left was because I also had a part-time job at Apple and just working as a specialist in Reading on the shop floor. And I loved it. And I was a real part of the team. You know, they knew how to treat me. They treated me like Molly. I wasn't a burden to them or anything like that. And to be honest, if I wasn't working at Apple whilst at university, I probably might have stuck out university a bit longer, but it was just such a contrasting experience where I'd been really well looked after and valued at Apple, whereas at uni it was a complete opposite. So I thought, you know what, sod this, I'm going to leave, I'm going to do some more hours at Apple and just work out what I want to do later. And, you know, and that really helped me out with my mental health, because I was just really struggling. You know, I just saw myself going backwards and it just wasn't good for me. So working at Apple and building up my confidence and stuff was great, and did that on a weekend. They're really good at sort of helping me out in terms of like when I was tired and shorter shifts and working around rush hour and things like that. They were brilliant. But what then happened, because I continued to blog, I was then getting a lot of interest to work with other tech companies, particularly since my blog was then going viral. If anybody doesn't know, obviously, if you work at Apple, you are solely Apple.
You can't work.
It's very, very tricky to do anything.
Yeah.
Apple when you're at Apple. You know, and I honestly got to a point, because I did one blog about the Apple Watch, and honestly it was when the Apple Watch first came out, and amongst us employees and customers, we were all very, very unsure about the Apple Watch. You know, it was like, really, what is this watch gonna do that's gonna be, you know, as good as the other products? Like, really? Like, it was very everyone was very, very unsure. A lot of customers were saying, well, it's just a con trying to get everyone to buy an iPhone, etc., etc. But I, purely out of curiosity, because being kind of the tech fanatic, I bought one with the intention of returning it within 14 days, to be honest with you. But I bought one out of curiosity and I trialed it and everything, and I wrote a blog. And this blog was not biased, it was very pros and consy, and it was from the perspective of a deafblind adult. And this blog went viral, and I think for one or two reasons. It was probably one of the first positive reviews, and secondly, it was from the perspective of, you know, a deafblind woman writing about independence, the reliance on technology through the Apple Watch. Like, I talked a lot about navigation through prominent haptics and vibrations on the watch, and how I was able to do that in San Francisco when I was traveling. You know, so this thing went viral. My website crashed. I had no idea what to do. I thought I was going to get sacked from Apple. I was like, oh my goodness, what have I done? My parents were like, you're crazy, Molly. Like, this is amazing. This is really good. Like, Apple is just a part-time job at the end of the day. You're getting your £8 an hour. You know, you want to be thinking about your future anyway. So I actually went to Apple I got invited over to Cupertino, and I met not I didn't meet Tim Cook or anyone like that, but the accessibility team over there. And I actually was really quite ballsy, and I said, "Look, you know, I want a career in this. This is what I want to do. Obviously, I've got a unique niche for technology and accessibility. You know, at this point at Apple, I was running workshops for people with disabilities. You know, like how they can get the most use out of their products using the built-in accessibility features on Apple products. You know, I just was like, can you at least give me some kind of guidance or something to aim towards? You know, I want a career." And they were sort of, you know, supportive, but not, you know, they didn't give me any clear guidance. So I came home, I handed in my notice, and I went self-employed, built my company.
But I suppose being able to go to Cupertino, speaking to some very senior people at the accessibility team in Apple, that's huge.
Amazing. Really, really cool. And obviously, like, built like contacts, you know. So obviously, I've got contacts. It's incredibly difficult to work with Apple, but to know them and to say that I've been over there, you know. And whilst I was over there, I also got in a LinkedIn, and I spoke to them over there. And I just throughout Silicon Valley, like, been to a couple of conferences, and you know, just all about that networking, isn't it? And sort of getting to know people in the know. And you know, so yeah, so it was a real turning point, really, because it was kind of like, right, I kind of didn't realize, I think everyone realized before I did, that that was kind of where I was heading, like in the tech of industry. You know, I kind of left university to work at Apple purely because I loved the team, and I loved who I was there, because you know, they valued me, and I was confident, and they accepted me and my guide dog as one. You know, like, there were so many things that a lot of people would sort of take for granted in a workplace, but they really nailed it. And I just went there because I was happy there. But obviously, that's where everything sort of started for me. So yeah, that was the birth of Molly Watt
Of Molly
Talks.
Watt, okay, and you've been doing loads of stuff, I know, since then, I suppose, and we see you popping up in particular every year on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. I was reading your most recent blog. Do you think that the state of digital accessibility is it really getting better? Is there still a lot of lip service, or are people really genuinely trying to do the right thing?
Yes, I want to say yes, mainly because in the time I've been doing it for a long time, which was the most infuriating thing, it still occurs, but for a long time, people were just talking about it. They're like, accessibility, what a great thing to be doing and thinking about. But they weren't actually doing anything about it. They weren't actually, you know, actually being productive in that area and building, you know, inclusive experiences. It was still very much thought of as a afterthought and kind of something to come back to, you know. Oh no, that's not in our budget, we'll revisit that next year, you know, a lot of that. And that went on for a really, really long time. And with Global Accessibility Awareness Day, I think we just had our 11th or 12th one. Every year, I've noticed, you know, more and more companies coming on board and celebrating it, which I think is great. It's a great starting point. But as I'm like constantly urging people online, I'm like, please don't let it just be the one day a year that you think about it. Like, it has to be something that is considered all the time, in every project, you know, in recruitment and everything. Like, it is everything. It's not just your digital output, it's also internal, you know, your employees, your recruitment process. Like, a lot of people and places talk about recruiting a diverse workforce. Well, in order to do that, you need to be inclusive. You should design inclusive recruitment processes. LinkedIn isn't necessarily the most inclusive. Employee from elsewhere. You know, there's lots and lots of considerations that certainly still a lot of companies aren't thinking about. But I would say, in that sense, we have come a long way, in a lot of ways. But there's still, yeah, of course, there's still holes where it's like, okay, like, clearly they haven't considered this. You know, little things like They may have an event and they thought to invite an interpreter. So there's a sign language interpreter. Well, that's great. But actually, for me, who's deafblind, I'm not a signer. I would actually benefit from like some captions and some large captions and some transcripting and, you know, things like that. So it's just the outside of the box kind of thinking, which actually to me is straightforward. But for people that haven't come across it or worked in it or worked with anybody with a disability, it is very new and alien. And so in a lot of ways, it does feel like we have to start again and start afresh, you know, with basic disability awareness. And then in other ways, which is almost harder, you kind of have to, you have to talk to people that think they already know about accessibility and what it means. And it's like, actually, no. Mm. And actually with accessibility, it's a constant education because technology is constantly evolving and innovating, which is brilliant, but that means we've got to keep up with that, you know, with the software. We've got to be designing accessible, inclusive experiences that work with the technology out there. So there's a lot more to it. I think a lot of people still have the attitude that it is kind of this, you know, add-on feature that's kind of a bonus. You know, they might not admit it, but they kind of are that way. But I do think in a lot of ways, for myself speaking, I think it is getting to that point where people aren't just thinking about it now. They're actually doing something about it. So it is something. Like, I think from my personal experience, a lot of the time I'd get asked to do a presentation. I'd come in, do a presentation. They'd be like, "That's amazing, Molly. Really, really inspirational, blah, blah, blah." And then I would never hear from them again. Right. And I would never, you know, and it's like that's the most infuriating thing
that's
for
not
me.
Good enough. Yeah. And I suppose, look, all you can do is fly the flag. And if you can capture a percentage of people, if they will come back and engage. Molly, I'm conscious of your time, but there are two things I just want to maybe briefly touch on. And one is I want to bring you back to the trust for a sec. And I was watching on the social media a couple of months ago. There was this very powerful video footage coming out of what you guys were doing in terms of giving people their hearing back. I suppose people who mightn't have heard in years, who had low vision, if I'm not mistaken, with cochlear implants and other technology. But can you just tell us a little bit about that? Some of the videos were very powerful.
Yeah, so it's not the cochlear implant, it's the smart hearing aid technology that GN Resound are making, and they have made, there's many, they're a Scandinavian company, and they make brilliant smart hearing aid technology. And I was lucky enough to try all these hearing aids 6 or 7 years ago, and that was when they're like a different model, older model now. And the main bonus with these, because again I was blogging about them and I was talking about the great things, and other people with Usher syndrome are coming forward saying, "Oh, this is great, we'd really love to get a pair of these hearing aids." Now unfortunately they're not on the NHS, which, you know, that's another issue with, you know, funding these things. So obviously through the charity we were like, right, so this is kind of our goal now, we want to try and fund these hearing aids, but obviously they're not cheap. But the argument being, if you are not just deaf but you're also going blind, it is every deaf person's worst nightmare to lose their vision, because deaf people are incredibly visual. They rely on whether it be sign language or lip patterns or gestures, facial expressions, all of it. To then lose that, you know, is incredibly terrifying. And so the importance of having the best hearing aid technology is elevated even more. So we were kind of really like, right, you know, we've seen what these hearing aids can do for Molly. In short, these hearing aids, not only just, because the thing with digital hearing aid technologies, what they tend to do, they just amplify sound, so make everything louder. It's not 100% realistic, but it makes life easier in terms of communication and hearing people. For me, when we got these smart hearing aids, it was quite an adjustment, because they were focusing on the clarity of sound. So not necessarily amplifying everything, but making sounds more, like with more clarity. So I could understand it better, but I could also hear a more realistic sound. And with that, for the first time, I could localize where sounds were coming from. So as someone who's deafblind and out and about with my guide dog, there'd been a couple of instances where my guide dog has abruptly stopped because a car had been pulling out of somewhere, and I've heard it, but I've not heard where it's coming from. So from a safety point of view, like, that's been quite terrifying. Whereas with these hearing aids, I'm able to gauge where these things around me are happening. So if someone across the road is calling my name, I can roughly hear where they are and what direction they're coming from. Or if I'm in a meeting room full of 20 odd people, I can follow a conversation and see where the voices are coming from. I can't see them, but my hearing aids point me in the right direction. So it's a lot more inclusive. And above all else, there's an app that comes with the hearing aids. So the hearing aids, on the app, you can adjust the bass, the treble, the background noise. You can also contact an audiologist over there. So through the app, there's a form that you fill out, and it's basically, what hearing aid is broken. This is basically essentially if you've broken a hearing aid, which hearing aid is broken, why, what noises is it making, blah, 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 blah. And then this gets sent to an audiologist. Audiologist picks it up within 48 hours, has a look at my audiogram, reviews it, and then adds some changes, and then sends back this audiogram. I receive it on my phone, like a software update, if you like, and then it then tells me that I've got to scan my hearing aid next to my phone, and that's what I do, and then it will reinstall a new hearing aid update and fixes it. Right. So the thing is, like, with that, there's a lot to it, because obviously anyone would think that's cool, but if you're deafblind, you know, getting to an audiologist can be really hard work. We don't drive for obvious reasons. So we've now done a good few cases now at the Molly Watt Trust where we've given people these hearing aids, and we follow that through with audiology appointments, and we go and check in with them, with the audiologists. And, you know, the audiologists have been amazing at sort of contributing and helping us out at the Trust. But the Trust have been funding all of that. So, it's been really, really, really exciting.
And some of the videos are very powerful. Some of the things people have been saying as they're hearing, you know, for the first time, or somebody turns a dial. And Molly, I suppose, finally, before we let you go, what's Molly Watt's plans for the future? What's next on your big list of things?
Well, I think, you know what, starting small, because of the last few years everybody's had, I think I'm working slowly towards getting back out there and traveling more with my work, like I was doing pre-COVID, but doing a little bit more of that, and, you know, building everything back up, because it's, you know, like everybody, again, it kind of just feels like in a lot of ways you're starting again, but you're not really. You know, things have still been happening, all remote, obviously, but kind of building that up in my self-confidence. I also have a little role at Next Digital, a web agency based up in Macclesfield, and they're a great team that are very focused around human-centered design, and accessibility is at the heart of everything they do. So spend a lot more time with them is definitely what I want to do as well, because they're doing some exciting things. You know, upskill and meet more people, and, you know, just create more of an impact, just more of the same basically.
More of the same, and get out and about and keep spreading all the great stuff that you're doing. Molly, it's been great to catch up with you. Just before we let you go, how can people get in touch, where can people follow you and keep up to date with all the stuff that's going on?
Of course. So I do have a website, but I feel like that's really, like, dated now. So social media would probably be the best one. So Twitter, I'm at Molly Watt, WATT, and then Talks, so TALKS, or one word. That is the same handle on Twitter and Instagram, also on Facebook and LinkedIn. I'm also on TikTok for those millennials, if you're interested. Molly Watt dot talks instead of all one word, so there's a full stop after Molly Watt and then Talks. Or there's my email address, molly@mollywatt.com. Nice. One of those, feel free.
Loads of ways to get in touch and keep in touch with all the stuff that you're doing. There's always lots of bits and pieces coming up on your social media, and I enjoy keeping in touch on that way as well. Molly, it's great to chat to you. Thanks for giving us your time. I do hope it won't be the last time, so stay in touch with us. We'd love to get you back on the show. But for now, thanks a million for joining us.
Yeah, Yes, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Well, that was wonderful, wasn't it? My sincere thanks there to Molly Watt. She's involved in so many things, really, isn't she? So remember, mollywatt.com. And Molly has already shared all her social media contact details as well. So do make sure you get in touch with her or keep an eye on her activities, because I suspect there's going to be lots of them in the next couple of months. That's just about it from this edition of our podcast. But we're back soon. Until then, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight & Sound Technology, take care and thanks for listening.